Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Rush Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
Today we're going to talk about fun stuff, because we're going to put all that non-fun stuff behind us.
I'm really excited for this one, honestly. I just want to talk about these fish. It's nice to talk about fish I want to talk about.
Was it hard for you to come up with your list?
It was so hard. It was hard to narrow it down.
This might have been one of the hardest ones for me.
I would agree with that.
So there's a certain irony is not the right word, because everybody misuses the word irony, but there's a certain
All right, Alanis. Let us know what you got.
Isn't it ironic? There's a certain essence to this was the hardest list to come up with. I mean, that says something about, you know, what actually, maybe what does that say about the other list that we came up with? So for all of our listening audience, the topic of today is the top five freshwater fish that make us smile, which really seems like it should be, hey, my top five favorite fish. But no, it's this. There's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
There's more than just like, I really like this fish because, I mean, this is when you see, for me at least, right? When I see this, it's not just, hey man, that's cool. It's, I just got a smile on my face.
Yeah.
Part of my criteria because of that was the fish that I get really excited when I see in other people's tanks.
Like, I have a feeling there's going to be some more crossover on this episode than on any of the other top five lists. That's my prediction.
I don't know. I'll be surprised. There's one that I think will be on one of yours. There's the rest of them I think I'll have close relatives.
Okay. I think, so I know one that I will be very surprised if no one else has. One of mine, I have to admit, is I cheated a little, but we always cheat on these.
What? Well, we've barely talked about this, so I'm curious what your guys' criteria was.
Okay. That was my criteria right there, that if I see this,
mm-hmm.
Be that in our tanks, none of these fish are something I have in a tank. In fact, most of them, two of them I have had in my tanks at some point. But it's not even something that I go for when I'm doing an aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
It's just somebody did this and I went, hey, I'm smiling now. That's it. That was my criteria.
Yeah.
You too?
Pretty similar,
Pretty
yeah.
Similar? What about you?
Similar. They were mine. I think two of them I probably would or could keep right now, but we have those both in the store and I haven't. So it's a really tough thing to nail down.
Yeah.
Like, what about a fish makes you smile?
Makes you smile. Yep.
And I don't think I can get that much more into detail without just kind of getting into it.
All right. So get into it. What's the first one?
All right. So my first one is, this one might be surprising to you guys. I chose Congo tetras.
You know what? That doesn't surprise me, but they're awesome.
Yeah. And I think I've talked about this fish before. I love this fish, but they make me smile because I sort of feel like they're a fish that like a kid would design if they were coloring. And they're just kind of ludicrous looking. They're rainbow colors. They've got that really interesting tail shape that like, why would their tail be shaped like that?
They kind of look like they have laser armor.
Yeah, and they're just so pretty. Their relationships with each other are so interesting. I don't know. I don't have too much crazy to say about them other than every time I see them in a tank, I smile.
I kind of think that that's a fish that has undeservedly become unpopular, because I don't get questions about Congo tetras, but I remember like 15 years ago, they were like everyone... I knew a lot of people keeping them. I don't know anyone personally that's keeping Congo, like the standard Congo tetra right now.
Seems like it's a fish when we get in, it moves okay.
Slower Sometimes. Than other tetras though.
Okay. Yeah. Hmm.
Like, I don't think that we sell them in proportion to how cool they are. I think we sell them regular tetra.
Right.
And there's definitely something special about Congo tetras and the whole group of Congo tetras, but I'm just talking about the Congo tetra, like the one we all know.
The classic.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is Phenacogrammis Ineruptus. That my notes right. are weak. I don't have scientific names in there, but I'm pretty certain on that one.
That sounds right.
Okay.
No, it's a cool fish. I'm just going to throw out there, not on my list, but there aren't a lot of big tetras that I get excited about.
Yeah, I've kind of been on that lately. I've even kind of been getting excited about the piranhas lately, of all things. So maybe that's just my little tangent.
I think you're just plugging for the Africa, South America competition thing we're going to do here pretty soon.
I mean, and if I could get people to get the regular Congo tetras as a gateway drug and they can make me order the cooler ones.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, yes, somebody get really into Congo tetras and decide the regular ones aren't good enough for you, and then I will order you all sorts of funky ones that are really expensive.
The orange flash mm-hmm. and the...
There's a bright red one, too. Yeah. There's a bunch of undescribed ones that... Oh, yeah. Those lamp eyes.
The lamp eyes are my favorite.
Yeah.
But bar none. Yep. They make me smile, but they weren't on my list. They should have been, apparently. But.
We can file them all under this category.
Yeah, I like it. Cool. No, that's a good choice. It's fun. Easy to keep.
Yeah, they're not very finicky. Right?
No, not at all. Yeah, and I wouldn't say that any of mine are that finicky because they don't make me smile if they die.
We'll get to mine later.
Yeah.
What you got, Charles?
All right, so I'm going to use the one that I cheated on a little bit first.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Any fish that you have bred...
Oh.
Like when you walk into your and look in one of your tanks and they're a baby fish, you're gonna smile.
I can't disagree with that.
That is, it's a good way to approach this discussion. It definitely is cheating.
It's definitely
and
cheating.
We're not letting that slide.
Right.
But also, I mean, yeah, I didn't put my buffalo head cichlids on this list because I've talked about them too much already and nobody cares. But there's something sad. Even if it's like,
yeah.
I mean, like, I know you've done cherry barbs, right? But every time you see them, you still kind of get
every
like
time
that
I look
little
at a cherry barb now,
butterflies.
I smile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting. There is definitely a fish on my list because at one point I bred it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get so at first I thought that you were saying that when you walk into your fish room or look at your fish tank and it's, hey, that fish was born in my tank. But really you're saying, I at one point bred these and now I'm looking at somebody else's tank. And I say, oh, that's a fish I bred.
Yeah.
You'll love them forever.
You will always have a soft spot for a fish species you've bred.
I think that this is, now that I'm understanding it, I'm saying, wow, Charles, that's a really good one. At first I went, breeding lab and all. No, I think that's good. I'm even taking back the he cheated thing.
I was going to say, for me, it's also a plug for the local aquarium club's BAP program. Mm-hmm. Like if you're not involved with, if you're breeding and in the club and you're not trying to get those points, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But, or at least discussing with people, that's just, there's so much to be learned from that resource and such.
It's
there are a
so
lot
much
of cool
of
people
the fun.
There.
Yeah.
That's a good plug. And it's a good fish. Okay. So if you could, like, what's the fish that, and maybe it's even, you see it on a wholesale list or you walk in the store and you see we got some in that you bred that like comes to mind immediately when you think that.
Cherry barbs. Because that was the first fish I ever bred.
That's very cool.
So every time I look at a cherry barb, I'm thinking of it like, my first thought is in the context of when I was breeding them, I bred them for like 5 generations. So when I look at cherry barbs, I think of them in the context of how would they have fit into that program?
Right.
Yeah. It's such a wink too at like the concept of this discussion is often less about species and more about individuals. Mm-hmm. Like a fish, like a singular, that guy that you love will make you love the whole species forever.
Pseudotrophus species ACI, which is an Mbuna, and you know, we don't give a lot of love to Mbunas here.
Yeah, and it's like it's a common one. Right.
That's the first African cichlid that I bred. It's also the first fish that I bred. It's also the first mouth brooder that I stripped.
Oh,
and
cool!
That's a really cool thing.
Yeah, that feels like I'm doing something.
I'm popping baby fish out of this fish's mouth.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yep.
We'll have to do a YouTube video one of these days when we have a Umbuna holding on how to strip a fish. Because it's kind of a cool thing. It's a little, it sounds a little rough, but.
It is a little rough. It's a pretty cool thing though. It is really cool though. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So yeah, I get it, Charles. That's a good one. 2 points.
Oh, he gets 2 points for cheating? Man, I should have cheated more.
Well, you know, cheaters win here.
Yeah.
Fine. Well, what's your first one? Are you going to cheat too?
No, I'm actually going kind of straight up like, okay, this makes me smile. And that's a fancy goldfish done right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So I had to do the, and I have to admit that on my list, I have a little caveat in there, I think, for every one of them. Right? And for fancy goldfish most of the time make me sad.
Yeah.
Right? But when fancy goldfish are done right, when you see like a big 125 or 180 gallon tank with 6 or 8 big, beautiful, like softball fancy goldfish, mm-hmm. and the water's really nice and clear and it's got the right kind of substrate in it.
And they're actually swimming.
And they come and they look at you with those googly eyes and they're all happy and you could tell. I mean, that fish just looks, now that's a happy looking fish.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me smile.
Yeah, healthy, fancy goldfish always look loved because they have to be.
Yes, they need a lot of love.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be our roundabout way of saying goldfish are not exactly, at least in my opinion, not a beginner fish. But
no.
And they're horribly abused and they're horribly oversold and overproduced.
And overbred.
Result, overbred. Yeah. So we get these fish that are sold as beginner fish that get massive and are... come in terrible shape and in horrible condition. And for you know, lots of people out there know that are coming to the store, it's very rare that we have fancy goldfish for sale here. And the reason...
There's a lot of reasons.
Yeah, but it's not that we don't like fancy goldfish. I personally, like I said, it makes me smile every mm-hmm. time I see them. But getting quality fancy goldfish that we know are going to go to someone's home and they're going to live for 30 or 40 years... It's almost impossible to get.
Yeah, like finding the right place to get them and the right person for them to go to. Mm-hmm.
For me, honestly, I think it's harder to find the right place to get them right now. Just that, like, all the market is flooded with crap goldfish right now.
But this is 2021.
2021.
So we're talking about happy. This makes me smile.
So if you're a goldfish breeder who knows how to do it right, give us a call.
Give us a call.
Please. I think that was a great one, and I was not expecting that.
A big fancy tank. The personality. Is mm-hmm. it? The personality of healthy goldfish.
Yeah, and it's like the type of thing that's so clear like the first second you see them. You're either happy or sad, and there's like no in between. Yeah.
You didn't think of that one?
No.
I thought, actually, that's the one that I thought was going to be almost universal.
I didn't even think about goldfish, because
most usually, of the time they make you sad.
Yeah. Same. Yep.
Yeah. By the way, little thing there. If you have a fancy goldfish tank done right, I would love to see pictures and hear the stories. By the way, if it's smaller than 50 gallons, please don't send me pictures.
And I want to know all their names.
Right.
Because goldfish need to have names.
My wife had one named the Puggle. The Puggle was adorable.
Yeah. She also had Aretha, which was such a great fish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Quazzy.
Cool. Quazzy. I can only imagine.
Yeah, Aretha was very cool too. Anyway, there we go. There's mine. Fancy goldfish.
Cool. All right, my next one I think might be on your list, but we will see. I kind of had to put a puffer on here because puffers make everybody smile.
They do.
But I went with the South American because I think that's like the most smile-worthy of all the puffers.
Yeah, I don't... Everyone's going to hate me at first when I start speaking on here, and then everyone's going to get... I don't actually like puffers.
Yeah, I hate you.
Each puffer I've ever met makes me fall in love with them, though.
Yeah. That's so perfect.
Because I don't like the concept of puffer fish, but every single puffer fish I've met has so much personality. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean the concept of puffer fish?
It's just like when you look
at
it. Yeah, when you look at them on paper, or like, it's just not a fish I ever see me keeping.
Like, if you list out all the requirements and, like, all that.
Yeah, but then, like, you meet a puffer and you're like, all right, this guy's pretty funny.
And part of that is because most puffers, they need or want to be kept singly. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that, they also need and want a really diverse environment and a lot of enrichment. So
special
it's like
diet.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of issues to keeping puffers, and I don't keep South American puffers at home. I have a separate puffer that I'm not going to get into right now, but you can keep those in a group pretty easily.
That's pretty crazy.
And that helps a little bit with the enrichment. Mm-hmm. You can keep them with other fish, even as long as they're not fish that they can eat. And they always kind of seem happy. Like, they don't hide. They don't, like, a lot of puffers are really lurky. They want to, like, lay on the bottom or hide in some plants most of the time. And these are ones that are always out, always greeting you. They're like the big peaceful version of pea puffers. They're perfect.
My favorite nickname for pea puffers is murder beans.
Mm-hmm. Because they have the aggression of a fajaca or an umbu in a 1-inch package.
In a cute little package. Yeah.
South American puffers are the puffers that nobody knows they want, but everybody wants.
Everybody wants, yes. Mm-hmm. They're every person's puffer.
It's true.
Right? That's a great choice. They would. Whenever I see them, I do indeed smile. Mm-hmm. It was indirectly on my list because I cheated with one. So it was sort of on my list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know this is backtracking a little bit, but I just got a good analogy for me and puffers. It's like, you know when you have a friend describing one of his friends to you and you're like, wow, this guy sounds like a jerk. And then you meet him and you're like, oh, okay.
Oh, he's not so bad.
Yeah.
I see why you're friends
like,
with
oh,
him.
Oh, he sounds like
funny.
A jerk, but he's actually really funny. Yeah. That is totally
that's
puffers.
Puffer. That's pretty good. I like that. Good choice, Amy.
Yep.
Charles, what makes you smile?
So, like you, many of my fish have caveats.
Good.
So, my caveat for this one is fat adult clown loaches.
Ah, yes.
Nice.
Much needed.
Yes.
Little clown loaches are cute.
They're cute.
Yeah.
But when you have like a 6 or 8 foot long tank and you got like 8, 10-inch, 12-inch clown loaches and they're like as oh, big yeah. around as or bigger around than your fist.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That would make me smile every time I saw it.
Yeah.
Because they are, they're very active. They use that horizontal space and mm-hmm. they don't look like they should be fast when they're that fat, but they are.
And they're so goofy.
And
yeah.
One of my favorite features about them is that they'll produce like a clicking sound.
They're never heard
really
them
vocal.
Make a sound.
They're very loud.
And I'll say, I don't think I've ever in person seen clown loaches like that. I've seen them in videos and I love it. But
the first time I heard clown loaches clicking, I thought the glass was cracking.
Wow.
It's very loud.
Wow.
Have you seen their cheek spikes?
I've seen, because I've seen pictures, but I've just never, yeah, I've seen that. I've just never like really been up close with them.
We took over a service tank. It was a 55-gallon tank. By the way, this is not how a puffer or a big clown loach should be handled, right? This is a 55-gallon tank. And they had a piece of slate rock on the back. And we came in, like we took over the tank, and we're just doing water changes on it. And the third visit, I saw something move. It had a bunch of African cichlids in it. Like 6, 8 umbuna in a 55-gallon tank with blue gravel, right? Like I said, we took it over. We did not set it up. I just want to emphasize that.
By the
you
way,
don't
we
set
didn't
up
set this up.
Tanks.
Yeah, we didn't do this. But then one of the pieces of slate moved. I'm like, huh? And I saw this this flash of something. I pulled the slate back, and a 9-inch clown loach.
Wow.
Came swimming out of there with its big spikes out, looking at me like, dude, man, you're messing with my house. This is cool. Yeah, he was gorgeous. But of course, a single clown loach is always going to hide.
Yeah.
Clown loaches are very necessarily a schooling loach, even when they're big.
Yeah.
They want buddies or they're not going to be comfortable. And this thing, we had been there 3 times and did not know it was there.
I totally believe it. Seeing the way they wedge themselves into weird little crevices.
But they're so cool.
It's like
they're
amazing. One of the biggest arguments to me for a big tank.
And that's mm-hmm. why like I personally am not sure I'd ever have a group of them because I think to do them justice, you need at least 180-gallon tank because you need like 6 minimum and they're going to get like 8, 10 inches.
Yeah. And
if
the
you get a
tank
big female,
mates
like
you can
12.
Keep them with are also large.
Yeah. But I love them. They were the original favorite freshwater fish for me.
I can't fault you for that.
Yeah, I can totally see it. They're amazing.
And they're fish that we carry very rarely because not everybody's got the tank for them. So it makes me smile even more. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you have some nice alternatives at most of the time, though,
because
I just like loaches. But
right. We can get some of that with some of the zebra loaches and some of the YOLO loaches and the Sid the Monkeys.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite ones to say.
Yes.
That's like the tangent. Me, believe it or not.
What?
Right. The name of a fish that makes me smile is Sid the Monkeys. And it was because all of a sudden somebody said, okay, I see you struggling with pronouncing that name. Right. And so anyway, just look at how it's written and try and pronounce it. If you've never heard it pronounced, nobody comes up with it. But then look at it and pronounce it Sid the Monkey.
That's actually the correct pronunciation, right, by the way.
The monkey loaches. Yeah. See? Amy just smiled.
Now, taxonomy every time you is see that, fun, you guys. Please believe us. Taxonomy is enjoyable and hilarious.
Right. Satan, Satana Perca.
Satan's yes. Perch.
Also, right. Like one of the chillest fish I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good scientific name does make me smile.
It does. It does. Maybe that could be another podcast. Scatophagus.
Yes.
Sorry, did we cover clown loaches?
I think I have the fine points that need to be all run right. for these.
We did a good homage. This is a really fun one because we don't even need to get that into care if we don't want to. We just know, get right? to talk about the fun parts.
Yeah. About the smileys, because, you know, 2021 is all about smileys.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Speaking of smileys, have you ever seen a group of big, mature white clouds?
Not for a long time.
Yeah.
They're amazing. When I see that, and it's got to be, so there's my caveat, right?
When they're big, they're meteor minnows.
Oh, right. No, long, no. That's long fin.
Oh, is it just long fin, the meteor minnow? Yep. I just always thought that was a fun name.
It's a great name. But just regular wild type white clouds. Tenichthys albinutus, I believe, is the correct scientific name. But a big group of mature, and the caveat is mature. I still like them when they're immature, when they're young ones. But when you've had them around for a while, that color gets almost that seems tannish with a pinkish hue, gets almost burgundy. When two males are displaying to each other, which they almost constantly do, they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful fish.
That's something that people really, really don't appreciate about freshwater fish, is that color is a way of advertising how sexy you are. Oh, yeah. And if you can't play that game, you are not wasting the time or the energy.
Yep.
And most fish for sale are juveniles. Fish you get now is not the fish you're going to have. Right.
It's really nice to have our displays around like that because we have some of the fish that they've matured and you can see how those colors are. The SB Resboras that we have that we had for a long time in the ellipse tank.
Yeah.
They sold so many SB Resboras because the immature ones just...
People would be like, what are those?
Yeah. They're these.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah. Like,
You must have a better light on there. No, it's just they mature. And white clouds for me when and it's got to be a decent sized group, at least a dozen. But that's really all it takes is a dozen.
Is it really a group if it's not by the dozen though? Seriously.
Well, and honestly, like, I think you're so right in having white clouds be the poster child for this. But I think we could almost expand that to like big mature schools of small schooling fish. I almost put those Beckford's pencils on my list today because of that.
Oh, they're awesome. Because
I have never appreciated that fish until that group.
No, 3 weeks ago, I would have said that's a boring brown fish. Now, I'm like, those fish are so active. They're always sparring and showing off. Their color is beautiful. And it pretty much plays for every single small freshwater schooling fish.
The biotope that we have going.
Yeah.
Has some fish maturing in it in their full color. Oh, they look amazing.
Yeah, you think you've seen cardinal tetras, but look at them in there.
Right.
Yeah. It's so notable.
Right. Look for that YouTube video coming out soon.
Yes.
Down on that biotope.
The white clouds are the perfect example, though. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
All right, Amy, what you got?
All right, I'm going to do my loach. I put hillstream loaches Specifically for me, it's like the Gastromyzon, Aeromyzon, like the smaller ones, but the Suellias, which are kind of the traditionally known Hillstream loach, they're just goofy, happy fish that are super active, don't hide like plecos do, always outgoing. I got to watch some of those. We've got just like the reticulateds and their spawning behaviors and stuff that. And they're just so, they just seem like happy fish. They're always
never
active.
They make me smile when I have to catch one.
No.
They make me smile when I get to make someone else catch one.
We made one of our new employees catch out like 10 1-inch Gastromyzon from a tank. Yeah, it took him a long time. But once they're in a tank, they definitely make me smile. Cool. And it's not just like, they're just so cute. Like their goofy, beady little eyes, and they're just so determined to eat everything.
Yeah. How are they with plants?
I've never had an issue with any Hillstream loach in plants.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
We got a group of the Gastromyzons in the Madagascar lace tank, right?
Yeah.
And I guess the lace plant's soft enough that...
And they're very specialist. Like the environments that they come from, there's not a ton of stuff growing in there usually. So they're usually either very specialized on films or whatever types of algae that would grow in their home. It's basically super fast flowing rocks.
Yeah.
So it's whatever algae that grows there, and that's what they like to eat.
They've got that super cool low profile so that the current can't sweep them away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't expect them to be your algae eater for anything more than film unless you know specifically what they eat. But the species that we have in our display are blackbeard specialists, apparently, or fibrous cyanobacteria specialists.
They're doing a great job.
Yeah. And they're an inch long. Yeah. I bet if we had twice as many of them, we wouldn't have black brush, but they're tiny fish. They can only do so much.
They're working hard.
They're doing their best.
Just look at them and
they're
smile,
always eating it.
I'm just picturing one in the corner and its stomach's bulging out. And he's like, I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
But that's what's so endearing, because they are always eating. They're like, oh, more, more.
I like to, and now I'm picturing like Vikings, like having a drinking contest, but
exactly.
It's like little loaches just munching and they're like, go, go, go.
Yeah, well, I cleared off 3 inches last night, man. What did you do? Yeah.
Okay, that made me smile.
Yeah, see? Yeah,
that's fun.
And they don't mess with anybody.
No, they're pretty much, and nobody messes with them because they look like rocks. Because
what is that little flat thing? Who knows?
Right. Yep. I think it's a twig.
All right, Charles.
I put down wild tiger barbs.
Mm.
I'm specifically going to, and I'm suddenly blanking on but the Bornean tiger barb.
Yeah.
I don't know. Their personality is just amazing because the domesticated strains are just jerks. But man, they have some really cool color. They have an almost like, instead of like that yellow or orange, they have like an amber thing going on. And then their black stripes have a little bit of green in them. Mm-hmm. It makes me think of like everything I like about a Hexazona except chunkier.
When those fish mature, that color gets, it turns into like this solid thing, and instead of this, you know, this silly paint job that they get.
Yeah. But so quick story. So my dad has never been an aquarium fish keeper, but he has always loved tiger barbs because he loves the activity they add in a tank.
Right.
And I think he might be the person that pushed me in the direction of barbs in the first place, just because he was interested and it was fun to talk about. So wild tiger barbs for me are like the evolution of the me moving towards wild type fish. I still like barbs, and it's like a callback to my upbringing. And it's coalesces all that together. And it's just not a fish you see very often. So every time I see them, I smile.
Yep.
Yeah. The smile for me comes from the distinction between them and the captive tiger barb.
Right.
Because I get it. Like, I get why people want them. They're so cool. They're so outgoing. And the captive ones are just, for whatever reason, we've speculated about it a few times, they are bastards.
Nasty little fish. If you keep a really big group of them, most of the time, they're just going to pick on each other. And they'll leave everybody else alone.
Mm-hmm.
And in that group, if it's big enough, they'll pick on each other without really probably totally killing anybody else.
et cetera, et cetera. Right. Like
all these little
footnote 1, 2, 3, 4
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But the wild types, nah, they're just chill.
They're pretty chill.
They're good.
Well, and I've heard so many disappointing experiences of like people who really love that fish and can't make it work. And if you really love that fish and you realize that there is a more beautiful, more peaceful option, which is the wild one, which is what they're supposed to look like, it's like, yeah, that makes me smile.
Yeah.
Like there is a solution.
I don't know how we managed to take some, this, I'm going to rant a little bit.
Good.
The domesticated tiger barb is a rare example of where everyone who listens to this podcast knows I'm very opinionated about captive strains.
No.
Domesticated tiger barbs, I think most individuals couldn't look at that in the wild type and say we managed to make it better.
That's true.
They just look weird once you've seen the wild ones. Their color is off. They're chunky in weird parts of their body. They get these weird, like the black splotches under their face. They just look weird.
It's like, oops, I guess we messed that one up.
Yeah.
I think that, that all of the domestic tiger barbs came from like a group of like 8 fish. Like all of them in the whole world.
And super hybridized too.
Yeah. Inbred.
And no, they're hybridized too.
Well, yes.
Hybridized and inbred, which is like, even crazier.
Yeah. That can't make for a solid, hey, this fish is great.
Well, and if, whether you're selecting for brightest color or like brightest orange or whatever, or leaving them to figure it out on their own in a pond, the most aggressive fish is going to make it to the top every time.
True.
So we've probably bred the aggression into them, but less intentionally than we did for domestic bettas.
Yep, that's true.
Like, I can understand when someone comes to me and says, I like an electric blue ram more than the wild type. I'm like, I don't agree with it, but I understand it.
Yeah, I agree.
I will never understand anyone that looks at a domesticated strain tiger barb and tells me that's better.
And whenever you see them, it's so noticeably better that it makes you smile.
Yes.
I think you're right. I like it.
Ben?
Okay, so I'm going with the cheater one. But I had help coming up with this one.
What are you looking at the audience? What did she do?
I'm going with, and this is sort of like, I almost chose like right along with you, Amy, but I'm going with someone who has that one pet fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about, you know, this is all fish are pets, right? But some people have that one fish. Like Robin had Aretha. My wife had Aretha. And that was her pet fish.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain other YouTube guy who's got his puffer. And you know, say what you will, say what you won't. That's a cool pet fish.
Murphy.
That's right. And a puffer, it often gets that title. Mm-hmm. There's a aquarium photographer guy that I know named Mo Devlin. Really cool dude. Takes amazing pictures. He is a Central American cichlid guy, and he has they're awesome. He's got a red devil.
I'm sorry, that's
pet.
Terrible.
That was really mean.
Mo's
a really nice guy.
I'm what a waste for a good photographer to be interested in Central American cichlids. I'm sorry, I can't help it.
He has a photograph actually that was in National Geographic.
Really? Wow.
Of rainbow cichlids protecting their fry.
Aww.
And it's an amazing shot. Yeah.
All right. Fine. I'll back off. That was too mean.
It was too much.
Wait. So I was drinking when you said that.
Yeah.
I know the photo you're talking of.
Yeah.
So you know this guy?
Yeah. He came to the aquarium club.
That's really cool.
Yeah. He's one of my Facebook friends.
Small world.
Yeah.
The fish keeping world is a really small world.
Sorry, I had to pause and be like, wait.
Yeah. All right. So sorry. I interrupted your story being a jerk. Right, Go back to it.
So he talked about how he did an aquarium talk on aquarium photography and how he does it. And it's really cool. We'll do a little,
that would be really good
a little side thing on how to do that. And how he got that shot. But it's a fantastic shot. But he has the pet fish. And we've got Biggie downstairs, which is the pet fish, right? And Murphy and a puffer. It's hard to not have a puffer be like your pet fish. So it's got to be done right. And it can be a species tank. And I think that works. But you have to, in order for your pet fish to make me smile instead of make me sad, because lots of them make me sad, it's got to be that big one-off show fish, can be in a species tank. But when you walk up to that tank, that fish comes, "What's up? How you doing? I'm so glad to see you, and I'm happy you're here." Right? Mm-hmm. Oscars end up being fantastic pet fish.
That's why people love them.
Yep. It's hard to beat a properly done, healthy Oscar as a pet fish.
Yeah.
I knew a buddy in college that you could boop his Oscar on the nose and he would be like, like you could see him get like excited that like you turned and poked him.
Ooh, attention. What are we doing here?
I had Brutus and Othello.
Yeah.
Those are my Oscars. And they would jump out of the tank to catch, I'm going to go food. I'd hold it above the tank. They'd jump up and grab it just like a dolphin show.
It's like the halfway between your goldfish one and my puffer one. It's a fish that you know is loved.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yep. I can never remember her name. The lady who had one discus.
Yes. Oh, Stover.
Stover.
I don't know the lady's name, but the discus's name was Stover.
Stover, right.
And it was what? Yeah, I don't know if you want to tell the story, but I'm the one who sold it to her. Yeah.
I think that means you should tell the story.
Because this was, she had a 29-gallon tank. She wanted a discus. And she knew that she was going to do whatever she had to do to have one discus. She would call us probably every week. "Oh, I think Stover's not feeling that well. He didn't eat all of his second portion of bloodworms today." Like,
she took such good care of that
fish. She did. And we told her, "All right, if you're going to do it, this is exactly what you have to do." Never kept fish before. She wanted to dive into a discus tank. And it was very precise.
Yes.
It was like she knew exactly what she needed to do to make sure Stover was happy and nothing else mattered.
Yep.
And it was so fun to have a person like that.
That makes you smile.
It does.
Yeah, that's like if you're listening to this podcast, like, damn, you came through for that fish. Like, like, kudos. Yep.
And if you love something and you know it's big, like, it's, you can tell when a tank has been designed around a fish instead of stuffing a fish in a tank. And that was that.
Yep.
And Oscars are often that. And whatever fish is loved.
A lot of Central American cichlids can get that kind of personality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why flower horns are so popular.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Right? I personally don't care for flower horns. But I think if somebody had their pet flower horn and I saw that fish come wiggling and shaking up because it was going to get a little bite to eat from the person who loved it, I'd smile.
I definitely would.
Yep.
I think that's part of why they're so popular right now, is because they were built for that.
Yes. Yeah. They're like
and
a pug.
And blood parrot cichlids. Yeah. They were also, like, they were built to be a ridiculous looking companion.
Like a pug.
Yep. And they
never thought of it that way, but that's really accurate.
Uh-huh. Yep. Uh-huh. That was a great point. Still cheating. I didn't cheat a single time this time, guys. I think it's my turn.
I think so.
I'd kind of like to see if you guys can guess this one. Because the way that I described it is, it's the bird of paradise of the aquarium fish. So it's a teeny tiny fish with a huge display that can't really do anything about it. And I'm curious what you think that would be.
Is it one of the pseudomiggles?
It's not.
I want to say threadfin rainbow.
It's threadfin rainbow. Yes, I knew you guys could guess it because it is. And that display is so over the top compared to their size and their mouth size, let's say, because they can't even eat other things, let alone kill them. And it makes me smile every time I see it. Those males are super dramatic, and like to see them sort of try and herd with their huge fins a female in to breed is really fun to watch.
If any fish would make it to like a fashion show runway,
yes,
it would be those males parading up and down the runway.
They're very avant-garde and they take it super seriously.
Flaunt it, baby.
Mm-hmm. And like you see them go after each other and it's like, it looks like they're fighting to the death. I've never seen a torn fin from a threadfin rainbow. I don't think they even have the physical strength to fight, but they act like they would.
It's kind of one of those fish that you walk up to a tank full and you go, huh, those are kind of cool fish. They're kind of neat. Whoa!
Yeah.
Like, you see the display.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, bam!
Explosive.
Explosive.
You gotta watch it.
Oh, yeah.
And it keeps you interested.
I think they're going to go do it.
I know.
They did it!
Yeah, I think that's one of the big mistakes a lot of people make when it comes to fish keeping, at least on the freshwater side in particular. I think both sides of the hobby are guilty of this, but yeah. Freshwater in particular, where people don't take into account the behavior of the fish as part of your right. display.
Mm-hmm. That is a... Cichlid keepers get that.
Yeah.
Right? And a lot of... Okay, a lot of times, you know, some of the cichlid keepers don't quite get the love around here that some of the other people interested in cichlid fish get. But one of the most fascinating things about cichlids is the behavior.
Yeah. But, like, what good is a ridiculously pretty fish if it does nothing? Like, what's the fun in that? Like, here's the example.
L146 plecos.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, if you never see it.
Right. By the way, I love L146 plecos. And when I see them, I get them. And when we get them, we sell them because they're that cool.
Yes.
Yes.
But.
They're just emblematic of a great example of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Talk about a fish that when you see it, you're going to smile.
Oh, yeah.
And you won't smile a lot, but when you do, it'll be a big smile.
Yeah. Sorry. I was going to frankly say, like, and they rarely make me smile, but they do when I see them.
And there are a lot of fish that are popular, but they're so boring to me because they don't do anything.
Right.
Yeah. All you need to make a threadfin rainbow outrageously stunning is a female within proximity and some moss.
Yeah. Yeah. The flick. Like the flick. Is, I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah. Well, like, and fish communication mm-hmm. is a really fun thing to watch. And it's not always very obvious. Like, if you stare at your fish for a while, you'll see, like, oh, like, my male is calling his female over when he flicks his fins just in the right way.
Right.
You can't miss that on a threadfin rainbow. Their communication is, like, billboard level. Like, come here! And it's so fun.
I really love some of, like, the subtle behaviors. Like... I'm trying not to laugh. Has anyone ever seen a male fish get rejected?
And get super dramatic about it?
Yeah. So, like, I'm thinking of, like, a pair of apistos I was watching a few days ago. Where the male...
Oh, females are, like, professionals that reject.
I know. Yes. The male is like... Yeah. Hey. And then she looked in his general direction and he flashed his fins. He got real dramatic. And she literally looked at him and was like, meh, and kept going. And you could see his fins slowly deflate as he understood that she was like, nah.
Even better, because half the time they will start chasing everything else in the tank. Like, you didn't see that. I'm still tough.
It wasn't at her. Yeah. Episto females are the mean girls of the aquarium
they
world.
They definitely are.
No doubt.
It's just fun to watch, though.
Yeah, for sure. That behavior. Yep.
Yep. Threadfin rainbows are my poster child for that, but like any fish that communicate very overtly is really fun.
That long finnage of threadfin rainbows is, there's nothing else. Like, if rainbows are the poster child, the threadfins are like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to like pick and choose my rainbows. Like a turquoise rainbow and their like neon stripe that they get up the forehead to mm-hmm. use to communicate. Mm-hmm. Rainbow fish are really communicative fish. And I think just generally underrated. But mm-hmm. threadfins are one of my favorites.
Yep. Good call. Cool. I like it. I'm smiling right now.
All right, Charles. How are you going to make us smile now?
I'm going to say Betta unimaculata females. Specifically.
I've kept that fish. Yes.
The males,
I know exactly what you mean, and you're right.
The males are gorgeous. They're really pretty to look at. Mm-hmm. I love them. They're amazing fathers. Dang, they have no personality. But the females.
Really?
Holy cow. So, when we first got wild Unimaculatas with a known collection location, I bought seven of them. I put them in a tank together. I wanted them to figure out who they liked and who they didn't like. And it took me way longer to get a successful spawn out of them because watching the behavior of the females trying to convince the so this species will seems to form like reverse harems.
Yeah. Some of the paternal mouth breeders, that's not uncommon in paternal mouth breeders.
It makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So the females, you could tell who was the most popular female at any given time. And the most memorable to me was at one point, one female, there was one male in particular that each female desperately wanted in her harem.
Interesting.
So that was the one that I affectionately called Pretty Boy.
Uh-huh. He ended up in my tank eventually. I love that guy.
You still have him?
No, he got into it with one of my other fish. I think he was trying to steal eggs. He was trying to rob the nest.
Of the buffalo head?
Mm-hmm. He does not tolerate that.
No. Fair.
Yeah.
I didn't think that they would. Now I've got to choose things that are only specifically I know they won't try to raise or to raid eggs. I think all of my fish are algae eaters now.
So anyways, this one female, she managed to have Pretty Boy in her harem. And then she lost him. I did not see her for 5 days.
She like went and sulked.
She went and sulked.
Wow.
And she lost her other male because she was not paying attention to him.
Wow.
How the mighty have fallen.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And like I knew if I wanted to get a spawn from this group, I had to divvy out the females with the males that they had at the time.
Right.
And I couldn't bring myself to do it for months because it was just so, like they never actually fought. It was just so interesting to watch because the females were always just vying for, like it was all like political intrigue. It wasn't physical. It was just who was in at the time.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
Yeah, sometimes we think of breeding as the only fish behavior, and it's not.
No, there's
like all little social networks and things that are going on. Like if we talk about, most of our fish are juveniles, you're not going to see that much out of them when they're at the store. Those are like, that's like fish high school.
Yeah. They haven't peaked yet, hopefully.
Yeah.
Anybody who peaks in high school, you just feel sorry for them.
Mm-hmm.
Any juvenile fish that picks as a juvenile, you feel sorry for.
Yes, the mature age.
Focus on some mouth breeding bettas again, and we'll let you personally. Which,
yeah. Okay.
We got to find betta ocellata.
Yeah,
I mean we got to reach out to our wholesalers and say, okay,
that's
your only hope.
That's one.
Probably help us out.
This is Ben, and you're my only hope. See what I did there?
There you go.
All right.
I wasn't wrong though.
It is one that Betta ocellata is one I've always wanted to do because that was the one that Mike Helwig specifically wrote an article on, and I've never seen one with my own eyes.
That was my first mouth brooding betta.
That was the one that got me wanting to do wild types.
Yeah, and since I had them years ago, I have not seen them since that one group. And that group, so that group went around the aquarium club. I know we're going on a tangent here away from
still related
fish, but that strain was so easy to breed that they were going for $1 a bag at fish auctions because everybody had them. Everybody would just get their group of six fry and they'd put them in the tank. And like 4 months later, they'd mature enough to start breeding. They'd have their babies. There'd be another 3 bags of betta ocellata at the aquarium club.
I love to see that.
And they just kept going. And that's how I got my six. And I had six of them in too small of a tank, and they did not care. They were awesome. I let somebody borrow them to get their BAP points. I'm not naming any names. And he let them all jump out after I told them, they will all jump out. Anyway,
missed that flash in the pan.
And that's why Unimaculatas don't always make me smile, but
right.
I know exactly what you mean.
Fish behavior is something that That, you know, that would be an entire podcast, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's some discussions to get into with not just what are some cool behaviors in fish, but okay, this fish is overlooked because of this, but it should be kept because of its behavior, and this is the behavior.
Mm-hmm. I almost put Brashardi on my list because of that. Because they will do the... I'm talking about Miolamprologus Brashardi and like their cohorts.
Right.
Because they'll do that like... not only are they fantastic parents, they're also fantastic aunts and uncles and neighbors, and they will communally raise fry.
You're kind of stealing mine.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Only kind of.
Well, it's your turn.
It's kind of.
It's your turn.
But so my next one of fish that makes me smile, of course, it's a little bit of a cheat, but it's cichlid parents raising fry.
That's not cheating.
No.
And whether that's Brashardi, they're one of the most amazing groups of fish to watch doing mm-hmm. that. I've seen giant Umbuna aquariums that also put in some Brashardis because they're cool. Brashardis, by the way, Neolamprologus Brashardi, Tanganyikan cichlid in with the Umbunas. And the Umbunas were twice their size, and they all, like the Brashardi set up camp mm-hmm. kind of right in the middle of the tank.
And it is camp. It's like tribal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you could see three or four different generations, and you could see a bunch of little fry, and you could see the two groups of Umbunas that this group always hung out on the left side, and this group always hung out on the right side. And they pretty much wouldn't cross the Brashardi camp.
I don't blame them.
Right. Because they're such good parents. Mm-hmm. We joke in the club a lot about convict cichlids. But when you see a group of convict cichlids raising fry, it makes you smile. It is
on my list too.
Did you really?
I really like, yeah. I was like, all right. But also every time I see a convict cichlid come in, I'm like, ugh. So I couldn't put them on there just because we have so many.
We're going to sit on those for a while.
Yes.
They're so easy to breed.
And who wants them? I don't
when
know.
When you see... Apistos or Pelvica chromis
mm-hmm.
with like snaking through a really well planted aquarium with this group of fry following mm-hmm. behind it.
I always picture like an Apisto mom when she's leading the fry around. I don't know why specifically, but come along, little Timmy.
Everybody hold fins. Like when one gets yeah. behind and they're like, push them towards it. So
that
fun.
Behavior is so amazing to watch.
Especially if they're biparental and like both parents are working towards it. It's
yep.
It's beautiful.
Gillidochroma species. You can't. Oh, when you see a group of Gillidochroma species protecting a group of fry, that is a ferocious little mm-hmm. group of parents there. And they can be in a tank with some big, nasty, mean Tanganyikan cichlids that are out there to eat the fry. And those Julie parents, they get wedged in these little skinny pieces of slate or whatever skinny little places they can find, and just little torpedoes coming out when yeah. everybody gets too close.
And they will fight to the death, but usually they don't need to. It's pretty discouraging.
No. They're fast.
Because I feel like they would probably attack me too if I was trying to move that.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's the only advantage ram cichlids have over Apistos is that they're biparental.
Right.
And just like... the maternal care is amazing.
Yeah.
But there's just something unique about two parents co-opting on it.
Or you could just go with buffalo heads.
I don't really like buffalo heads, though.
I love buffalo heads.
They're cool. Amazing. It's just, I could never see me keeping them.
That's something that Amy accomplished that I tried for years and did not accomplish was to try and breed buffalo heads. I had a group of them. They did amazing. They looked incredible. The males had these... The fin extensions on those things get mm-hmm. incredible.
It's stunning.
Yeah. They were in a tank that had Apistos breeding. I mean, there was, you know, things should have been right. Maybe it was the Apistos breeding that disrupted the buffalo heads too much, but I was never successful at getting
them. Well, you want to know what my secret was?
What's your secret?
I kept them like pet fish.
You loved them.
I loved them.
I did not give them enough love.
I built my planted tank around the habits of that fish. They're burrowers. They're not cave spawners.
I love that.
So I built a rock structure, let them dig underneath it, and then built my substrate layer over top of it and started growing plants over it. So I let them have what they wanted. Like I built that tank with them.
Oh, see, in the tank that I kept them in, I didn't know that much about them when I kept them. It was mm-hmm. probably 20 years ago.
Even now, people treat them like whatever African cichlid.
Yeah. I had big, chunky rocks as the substrate.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't burrow in big, chunky rocks.
Yeah. People say they eat plants or dig up plants. They want to burrow. So if you give them that, they don't.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
I'm just going to connect this with a statement you made earlier. So wait, you design the tank around the fish instead mm-hmm. of cramming them into the tank. Mm-hmm. You have.
Yep.
Write that down. That's a podcast.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a really fun
one. It would. How did, yeah.
Design a tank around a fish.
Mm-hmm. Which is how we should do it.
Yeah. I mean, whenever you hear, oh man, I kept this random fish and I saw babies popping up. It's like I kept an egg scatterer in a tank that had a bunch of loose, fluffy plants and babies started popping up.
Weird.
Weird. That's how that works. Who knew? Yeah. Anyway.
I kept these sick burrowing cichlids in a tank with these big, huge, chunky rocks that they couldn't move and they never bred.
Yeah.
Weird.
And they're not epistos. They just are what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So cichlids that exhibit parental care, there's much more fun than that.
That's one of the main reasons to me that cichlids grew so fast in popularity. People somehow think, I don't want cichlids because they're mean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks, Ubuna.
Well, first off, I'm gonna address this real quick. There's like 2,000 species of cichlids. You can't make generalizations like that.
Exactly.
I don't keep catfish because they're too big.
Okay, there's like 4,000 species of those.
Yeah. So I have one more. This is my betta group. Because I can't believe we haven't talked about bettas that much. And I'm going to say, I could be very much more specific, but I'm going to say the mini bettas.
Yeah.
To me, it's like betta cochina, betta brownorum, betta hendra, betta persephone, betta mini opina. Who am I missing?
A lot.
But I mean, of like the teeny tinies.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that to me are like the main group of them.
You had hendra and brownorum to me. That's
those are
the cool red version and the cool blue version. So you got me covered. Mm-hmm.
Rutilins, there's a few more.
Yeah.
But all the teeny tiny red and blue bettas, I don't know why they're not more popular. I feel like I should be selling those constantly.
I think the reason that they're not more popular is because really to get those colors to really shine, you gotta mess with the water.
But a betta cochina in tap water is still bright red with bright blue eyes.
Yeah, we have them right now. They look great. Everyone comments, wow, those are gorgeous. And then they don't buy them.
Yeah. I mean, they will eat some shrimp, but mostly babies. And
but most fish are going to eat your shrimp.
Yeah, and they're fantastic nano fish in a 2.5, 5, or 10 fantastic centerpiece. Keep a group of them. They're so fun to watch together. A lot of what we were saying about the Betta Una Maculata still applies. Their relationships are really fun to watch. They're peaceful. I've never seen them fight.
I've seen them argue.
I've seen them face off.
So for me, I'm trying to think if I want to make this joke. The mini bettas to me are like the New Yorkers of bettas.
I'm walking here.
I don't think I've ever actually seen them fight.
Right.
But I've definitely seen them yelling at each other.
Like if they could, they'd be flipping each other off.
Yes.
But that's about as far as it ever goes. And they're so cute.
That's such an amazing group of fish.
My favorite example of this is, and I'm not going to name names because I don't know if customers are okay with us name dropping them. But there's a specific couple that I convinced to buy a group of betta Persephones. And for like 4 months, they were trying to breed them. But they kept coming in and coming in with stories of, so this male has taken over this guy's nest and this guy.
But for them, it would be like, so Jeffrey and Henry aren't getting along anymore.
Yeah. I love that.
And it's not like the fish were fighting. It was just they were all like, what the prime real estate, man?
Yeah.
It's like the days of our lives of fish.
I'm not sure Ben knows that. So I gave them a bunch of film canisters to use as nests. And for some reason, I only had one black film canister to give them. And then I had some clear ones and some gray ones. For some reason, they all wanted the black one.
Really?
Yes. So anyone listening who wants to breed these, black film canisters. But
unless your group prefers clear.
Yeah.
Unless you only have one clear one, and then maybe that's the one they go for.
We'll fight over that one.
But like for some reason,
are these our friends out in the Lansing area? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they would just consistently come back with stories of, all right, so Jeffrey has taken over the black film canister, and Henry has settled for a gray.
Guys, big news this week. Jeffrey's been usurped. It's over. He's resigned in disgrace. I don't know what happened. Just like the amount of personality in that maybe 2-inch max fish.
Oh, if it's a big male.
Yeah. Like, it's hard to believe that something that small can be that intelligent and that personable and that much attitude.
Better and Persephone is the smallest you up every time. Fish I have ever dealt with that was never afraid of me.
Yeah.
Every time was doing work in the tank, they would be watching me like, what are you doing? Hey, what's that? Hey, you're messing with my stuff. Like they were, it would turn from curiosity to annoyance in about 3 minutes.
But never fear. They have no fear.
No.
Bronerum was the first one of those in that group that I kept. And that was probably 12 years ago when not many people were keeping, even fewer people were keeping wild type bettas. Right? And I remember walking down into my fish room back when I had a fish room, and that was on my killie shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my clown killies and a pair of Nothos and the Bronerums. And I can still picture those three tanks lined up. That might be three of the most incredibly beautiful fish in the freshwater crab hobby, all lined up in a row.
Yeah, definitely if you're talking 3 inches and below.
Oh, for sure.
I don't even think there's competition there.
No.
Although, I mean, there is. That's the thing. There's still the peak.
Yeah. Wait, which Notho? Wait, Bronerum or Hendra?
I mean, we could throw in some pseudomugils or some scarlet baddis, and we could get some arguments for beauty. But why would you argue about that? Just have them all.
That's 2.5 gallon tanks. I had like 12 of them. We could have them all.
Yeah. You could have a pair of every gorgeous nano fish in 12 2.5 gallons. Well, not every, but enough.
But enough. There's never enough.
Never enough. Never. But a lot. 12.
No, that's a great choice, Amy. I those are fish that need some more love.
Mini bettas.
Yep. Let's talk about them more so people get more love.
People want to put domestic bettas in there, 2.5s and 5 gallons, or you could have a trio, or you could have even more if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
More bettas, the better.
Yep. You better. I couldn't resist.
Well.
All right, Charles.
What do you got left?
This is your last one.
Yeah. So I have one that I think I have never talked about in this store.
Ooh.
I think will surprise everyone, and I have an amazing story for it.
I love stories.
Skunk loaches.
We've definitely talked about skunk loaches before.
Okay.
But I do want to hear the story again.
So, this is a prime example to me of a fish that's so evil that I love it.
I've heard this story.
That is a thing, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Like loaches, they're so friendly, they're so fun.
So cute. They like to snuggle with each other and everything else.
So this was the story of anyone that's ever wondered, why does he read so much before he does anything or adds anything into his tank? This is the story.
Well, you had clown loaches. They were really sweet.
They were so nice. So I walked into my local fish store and they had a skunk loach. And I thought, it's a boteated loach. It's small. And every other boteated loach I'd worked with at that point was very calm, very easy to work with. So I thought, what's going to be the problem? So I added it into that would have been a 60-gallon community tank. Mm-hmm. And I had a school of 20 neon tetras.
Oh, no.
The next morning, I had 11 neon tetras.
And some really fat looking skunk loaches.
You remember? Wait. You remember the topic of the podcast here, right?
Yes.
Right. It's fish that make you smile.
All right. So then he cried for 2 hours and then he smiled.
So then this was a fish that definitely had to earn my respect because I set her up on a tank on my desk that was next to my bed because that's the only space I had room for her. And I was like, this fish has just, she can't stay in here. This is
right. What is this? Was it a single that ate half your...
She didn't eat them. She just killed them.
Just for the sake of murder.
This is going to maybe get a little bit graphic. So loaches have those cheek spines. Mm-hmm. She cut those things to ribbons.
Wow.
Wow. Just to be a jerk. Not even to eat them.
And it's 60 gallons. It's not like there wasn't enough room. It wasn't territorial.
Nope. She was just anyways.
For the joy of murder.
So
sometimes you say things that make me nervous, Amy. I'm not gonna lie.
So I set her up on an 8-gallon tank on my desk next to my bed.
Yeah.
This is not the setup I would ever recommend for this fish. For anyone listening, by the way, right. They deserve more space and they should be in a group. But
this is the you already screwed up setup.
This was the I already screwed up. It's what I had, and it took me like years to find more skunk loaches. Like I was just at a time where like a lot of the LFSs were closing and mm-hmm. stuff wasn't okay. Mm-hmm. So trying to find anything cool was hard. So this fish was basically 3 feet away from my head when I went to sleep at night.
Plotting.
She would click at me. Not in an annoying way, but in a, like, you know how, like, when the windows, it's a cool summer night and you can hear the crickets?
Yeah.
Over time, she definitely got attached and would, like, try to figure out, like when I was doing schoolwork or when I was on the computer, she's watching what I was doing. She would flare up at glasses of water if I set them down on the desk. She just became a true pet.
It's that pet fish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like magnetic. And it's a sociable fish, so it is looking for that,
but
like,
dang,
validation.
Was she evil? I loved her, but she would have killed anything that you put in with her.
There is definitely a reason that so far we've talked about 3 different species of loaches, and I had to cut at least 2 from my list.
Really? They're so goofy looking.
Mm-hmm.
Like in an
Actually,
endearing kind of way.
I had considered at least 3 species of loach, really? Not including the one that I put on there, so at least 4.
Wow.
They're just that personable.
I cut out beachers to talk about skunk loaches.
I'm surprised that you wanted to talk about beachers.
They're just a funky fish.
Yeah, they are funky. Yeah.
They just look prehistoric as all get out.
They get great personalities.
They do, they do. So, I'm just surprised to hear that from him.
I want to get back to the skunk loach.
Yes.
Yes.
Like it's the pet fish.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And people don't often think of a loach as being the pet fish.
Yes.
But I get it.
That is a fish that I think back on specifically and I'm like, what would have her full potential have been if I had managed to get her a group and I had a larger tank?
Well, she might not have murdered as much.
Yeah.
She also might not have bonded with you as much.
It's true. Possible, but my experience with clown loaches and zebra loaches is that they're even more outgoing to you as a person if
it's
there's a
true.
Group.
That's true.
Just because... It's that weird, like, teenage boy where it's like they slowly goad each other on thing.
Mm-hmm. It's confidence building.
Yeah. I had a pair of Botia striata, actually in the same tank as the buffalo heads and the epistos.
Mm-hmm.
And the...
Egg stealers.
Egg stealers. That's probably my problem.
Could have been.
I was so young.
Mine killed a pandagara, so...
Oh, wow. Yeah. I was young and dumb then.
Egg
so
stealers.
I didn't know better. But that pair of Botia striatas, they were just constantly like slithering around each other and playing. They looked like they were playing. I was pretty sure it was a male and female just because one was skinnier and one was fatter. Never any indication that they were spawning or anything, mm-hmm. everything, activity like that.
Just like to snuggle.
But that they did. Yeah, that personality.
Oh, I just had a revelation that I think might help us to understand loaches. They're like the cats of the aquarium world.
Oh, I can see that.
Where they're like, they want to hang out together. They sort of want to recognize that they're super playful. But you got to kind of win them over a little bit if you want them to interact with you.
But if we call them the cats of the aquarium world, then I can only like other people's loaches.
Do you have any loaches?
Wow. I'm sorry we weren't filming that, because I can't express the look that was just exchanged by everyone in the room. Like, I can't describe it.
Wow. Clearly, both of you have cats.
I know he knows, but he's not wrong.
Charles and I are such cat people. Oh, that's really good.
For the record.
All right, fine. You want one big personable fish?
I do not have any loaches.
You just have a splash, which is basically a Central American cichlid. Wow. All right. We're learning a lot about each other tonight.
Tonight?
I do not have any loaches. Too much. I do not have cats. And when I say I like other people's loaches in reference to cats, I'm genuine. I like other people's cats. I've had cats in the past. I hated my cats. And my cats hated me. I mean, it started with my cats hating me.
Yeah. Right? But my cats and I are about as codependent as any two, as right. your two loaches that would not leave each other alone.
I get it. And that you have cats, I think is great. I would love to meet your cats someday.
You don't need
to defend yourself. We know you don't hate cats. We just like to tease you.
And you don't hate loaches either. But
I don't hate loaches.
I would definitely. I'm probably going to be adding Hillstream loaches to at least two of my tanks pretty soon.
I would certainly add loaches way before I would add cats. That was good. Let's call that a wrap.
Don't you have one more?
I do have one more, but you know, it's kind of hard to.
All right, we'll wind down with your last one.
Yes,
I kind of needed it.
Right.
That really hit me.
Good timing on that, by the way. For all of those in the listening audience, that was not planned. That was not staged.
And we were both so indignant.
I know, right? That was perfect. All right, so my last one, let's finish it off. This is what we're going out with. An extremely large group of cardinal tetras.
Mm, yes.
That's a great way to end it.
Yep. When somebody, and that's, you know, so I think that's, that. I think maybe that could be the unifying theme of the night. What is it that makes us happy? When people do fish right. That makes us smile.
Happy fish make me happy.
Happy fish have great behaviors. They exhibit their natural behaviors like threadfin rainbows.
Mm-hmm.
Happy fish breed, and if it's cichlids, you get this big group that takes care of their fry. Happy fish have that personal interaction that you get to connect with. Happy fish exhibit that natural behavior that makes them more interesting to us.
Like schooling or breaking off into different little groups to figure out what they need to do, like cardinal tetras do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when people come in and ask me, so what would you consider the minimum group size for cardinal tetras? My genuine and honest response is I recommend people buy them by the dozen. And I don't mean minimum of a dozen. I mean buy them by the dozen. The last time I bought myself a group of cardinal tetras, I bought 30.
That's doing cardinal tetras right.
Mm-hmm.
Cardinal tetras, and here's a way to think of why a really large group of cardinal tetras is the right way to do cardinal tetras. So they are in the wild, considered a seasonal fish. They live in the flooded forest plains of the Amazon River system in South America. And a lot of those fill up with water. Cardinal tetras hatch. They swim around. They do their thing for 6 to 8 months during the rainy season. Those pools dry up. The eggs go into the mud. And not long later, the rains come back. The eggs hatch and the cardinal tetras are back. They do this in such incredible mass that if right now every single adult wild cardinal tetra would poof, die. It would have a zero net effect on the overall wild population of cardinal tetras. They reproduce at such an incredible rate because there's so darn many of them. And in the places where cardinal tetras are found, when you go look at a cardinal tetra habitat, there are these little flashes of blue and red everywhere in massive schools of thousands. That's how cardinal tetras look incredible. And when you see somebody do that right, oh, it's a stunning display. It's taking a common, everyday aquarium fish that people would consider bread and butter and making it one of the most stunning displays of aquarium fish that's possible.
Yeah, a group of 20 looks good. A group of 50 looks great. A group of 200, you will never forget.
It's amazing.
That's the Shedd Aquarium tank with like 500 cardinal tetras. That is in an aquarium with sharks, dolphins, whales. That is always on the, like, there's no, in the family, it is understood we are never skipping that tank.
Right.
That's one amazing. Of those dedicated, spend at least 10 minutes there.
Yeah. Just sit and watch them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because it looks like nothing else.
Just sit and watch.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're listening and you're like, oh, I have 3 cardinal tetras and they don't school, well, they can't.
Yeah.
Get a whole bunch more.
Yeah, like, okay, yeah, 7, they will do fine. But 20?
Get a dozen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dozen. It's the fish that I'm like, 6 minimum, 12 to do it okay, as many as you physically can fit to do it well.
Yeah, have that be the focus.
It's worth it.
It's totally worth it.
I'll never be mad if anyone comes in and is like, can you order in like 40 cardinal tetras for me?
Yes, yes, we can.
I'm just waiting for the day when we get the order for, you know what? Get me in at least 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be
good. Because I want to look at it.
One of my first experiences young in an aquarium store was seeing a tank that had, it was a 125 or maybe even 180. I don't know. I was pretty young. And it was the entire tank, that's all that was in there, and it was full of cardinal tetras. Had to be 300 or 400 cardinal tetras in that aquarium.
That's so cool.
Stunning. Left a permanent impression on me with cardinal tetras. That's why they had to make my list of fish that make me smile.
Yeah, fish that make an impression.
Yes.
That's the fish that make us smile.
Yeah.
All right, I don't have that much to say, man. That loach conversation really wiped me out.
Well, I think that I'm gonna repeat what I talked about just a minute ago, and that's what are the fish that make us smile? It's when somebody takes just about any fish and does it right.
Mm-hmm. Loves
them. Love, takes proper care of them, puts them in the group that they need, puts them in the ecosystem that they need, does it right.
Yeah, and I think any fish done right will make me smile.
I think you're right. So, you know, you proved me right a little bit, because at the beginning of this conversation, I said, you know, I think this is going to be the one with the most repeats. There were no repeats.
Yeah, but we still pretty much said the same thing over and over again. Well, if you want to continue the discussion, please look us up on Facebook, Instagram. We'll definitely post a discussion question about this episode on Facebook. Questions, comments, concerns, email to podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen. That's how we sort of know how we're doing here. So keep us in the loop.
send us some pictures, some examples of fish that make you happy.
Please. I love pictures.
Yeah, that was, let's just say I worked the weekend and one of my highlights was people showing me pictures of their tanks.
Mm-hmm. Always fun. Speaking of fun, let's have lots of fun and let's keep those hands wet.